Jim, 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 Jim.
It is so true. Hello, people, and thank you very much for your time. We always appreciate it. Now, the lovely dulcet tones of the aforementioned Jim. That is me. Busy day for me, knocking, banging on my front door. My neighbors, they're like, hey, can you drive us to the vet? The dog ate a whole bag of Scrabble tiles. And I was like, sure, get in. And we drove to the vet. No word yet. Could spell disaster. Elon Musk won't leave his companies to his kids. After all, they might do something dumb and irresponsible to ruin the brand. A 102-year-old woman, Joyce Jackman, says sex is the key to a long life. Texter says, Jim, please, trying to eat. That's not nice. Al Pacino. Another texter. Jim, we've heard it already. I'm trying to eat. You guys are really mean. And finally, right-wing pundits are rallying against Chick-fil-A for supporting diversity, equity, and inclusion. Ah, man. You know, just like Jesus would do. I'm Jim Richards.
News Talk Tonight is on with your host, Jim Richards, on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Later on, we're going to ask, does anybody judge? Are you a bunch of judgies when it comes to Al Pacino? We're going to go to the phones on whether or not people are judging Al Pacino, because I think it's two grown-ups, folks. The only argument that I can come up with is, what about the kid who is going to have millions of dollars and a mom who may or may not be single? She's very young and apparently comes from a very wealthy family. What about the kids? Later on in the broadcast, I am Jim Richards.
Jim Richards, it's true, has issues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I think the big issue today that Canada should be looking at is what Jugmeet Singh said yesterday about David Johnston.
Exactly. And I've said that from the beginning. I have not attacked Mr. Johnston personally. I think he's someone who's clearly served his country, clearly put the needs of his country first. But again, I've said from the beginning it wasn't the right choice, because we shouldn't have gone down the path of a special rapporteur.
So the motion was voted on today, which was basically to ask Mr. Johnston to step aside and also call an inquiry. The opposition, this time the NDP and the Conservatives on the same page, they voted 175 to 150 to do just that. Have Mr. Johnston step aside because he just doesn't look good. I think he's a man of integrity, but the optics aren't good. And anyone who has a clue would think the same thing. Like any liberal who's going like, oh, there's no problem. But I don't know. I think Justin Trudeau, a long time ago, he spent all his political capital. And the fact that he still thinks he can parade around and convince Canadians that this is the right thing to do is just insane. And he's man. I don't know how he wiggled out of that SNC-Lavalin thing. But he shouldn't have been able to. And now we're at a position where David Johnston can't even read the room. He says, I deeply respect the right of the House of Commons to express its opinion about my work moving forward, but I've got a mandate from the government and I have a duty to pursue work until my mandate is complete. Man, read the room, step aside, because like for everybody's concern. I'm not somebody here who's trying to save the liberals. I don't even know if the liberals are trying to save the liberals. Yesterday, I pointed out that Anthony Fury, who is a candidate for mayor in the city of Toronto, he was telling us about a whistleblower who told us about a program that's on the books in Toronto and you can find on the website for the city of Toronto for about 15 years. That is the worst whistleblower ever. But the other thing is that Anthony Fury just doesn't seem to understand how things work. He wants everybody to be worked up about something that I guess nobody knew this, but he wants everybody to be worked up about.
I'm talking with voters and commuters, and people heard what I said, and they're giving me the thumbs up. So I think the people want to
go on the thumbs up, but I don't even know that a mayor kind of is at arm's length distance. Can't really even, you know, dictate public health. It's like you having a headache or a stomach ache, and you know what, who you call? Your city councilor. The same ones in Montreal who want dogs not to be able to bark, and ones in Toronto who only want you to have two signs on your front lawn. That's who you go to, because that's what you're doing here by saying Anthony Fury, who doesn't necessarily have the mandate to interfere with public health, but he doesn't, either he doesn't know that, which would be bad, or he's counting on you not knowing it. And when you point out about public health to him, he's like, ha, public health.
I'm not so sure about that, John. I didn't make an announcement yesterday about the fact that needles have been distributed for many years in public health agencies and systems to deal with, for instance, making sure you don't share needles because that furthers communicable diseases. What I announced yesterday, John, was, first of all, the shocking news that for a while now, taxpayer dollars have been going to creating crack pipes, crystal meth pipes that are being given out to persons.
It is shocking. I get it. Like, if I didn't know something one day and then found out something about it the next day, I might be shocked. But I'd also like to get some answers from people who actually know what is going on the front lines. Because I don't know, what's better than having an expert who knows nothing in the field and a bunch of people going, all of the facts are laid out in their face that this is the best thing to do, that have an addiction. Everybody's like, well, maybe they should stop having an addiction. Let's not ask the experts in the field, which I did last night.
It's not like it's new either. Actually, crack kits were like the beginning of the harm reductive supplies that we would distribute.
Back, and this is like in the good old days, because again, it's been around, but shock of all shocks, Anthony, and to be fair, I didn't know about it, but what could happen if you're sharing a crack pipe?
Rarely HIV, but hep C is a big thing. If like somebody has, it's blood to blood contact, right? Like, you're not going to get hep C through sex, but say like the pipes, like you've burnt yourself. Like, crack is a pretty addictive substance, right? So they're going to be smoking that, might burn them, might hit their lips. Like, there's a lot of ways that you can pass. Like, if you're snorting with the tubes, you can, that's blood to blood.
So this is called harm reduction. But on the other hand,
I'm talking with voters and commuters, and people heard what I said, and they're giving me the thumbs up.
Ah, the thumbs up instead of facts. Can't go wrong with that.
That's not the conversation here, John. I'm sorry.
It's Jim, and the conversation is about harm reduction. Like, it's all about harm reduction, but you ask him about harm reduction, and he's going to tell you that this is not about harm reduction.
That's not the conversation here, John. I'm sorry. The conversation is that as mayor, I am going to end taxpayer dollars being used to create...
Again, either you hope people don't know that you don't have the ability to do that on your own. Sure, you could bog things down, or you don't care if they don't know that.
I'm talking with voters and commuters, and people heard what I said, and they're giving me the thumbs up.
All right, the thumbs up. But what would the narrative be around harm reduction? I mean, if you wanted to talk about harm reduction, we asked our expert that yesterday.
That's always like the narrative they try to push whenever there's like available supplies, like harm reduction supplies for people, and they're always gonna like, you know, blow it up. I think that right now particularly, like, there's a lot of people coming out of the,
you know, I asked the same guy if he thought that there would be, you know, we're going to turn into a Seattle or a Vancouver, and he says there's no actual evidence of that. Or, hey, when I find out that there are free crack pipes, maybe I'm going to go out and start smoking crack. Will there be more people smoking crack if this actually happens? I don't think that that would be a thing either.
The majority of the people that come in to get a crack pipe or a meth bulb, they are already smoking crack or meth. So I don't know if like...
So it's just to stop the spread of certain diseases. But on the other hand...
I'm talking with voters and commuters, and people heard what I said, and they're giving me the thumbs up.
Thumbs up to everybody. Thumbs up beats facts all the time. You checkmated me there, Anthony. The Rundown is next here on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.
This is News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
CTV Ottawa, the senior digital parliamentary reporter Rachel Aiello is on this very broadcast in 1.5 hour to break down a real breakdown. Today may or may not be a significant day moving forward for the Liberal Party when the opposition voted 174 to 150 to, hey, ask Mr. Johnston to step aside as the reporteur, and moving forward, let's just swing into public inquiry. It just seems that Justin Trudeau and his efforts to assure Canadians that his government is adequately addressing the threat of foreign election interference is, I mean, the guy is so disconnected. Maybe I know people are like rolling their eyes going like, this guy's new to the party on this thing, but it's ridiculous to me. And let's find out who else finds it ridiculous or maybe not so ridiculous. We're joined by our favorites on Wednesday. It is Ken Eastwood, who's the host of the morning show at News Talk 1290. That is in London, Ontario. Carl Dockstader is with us as well. He's the co-host of One Dish, One Mic. Carl and Ken, thank you very much for your time. How are you doing?
Good.
Great. Guys sound enthusiastic. That's the way I like it. All right. Calm down. Calm down. It's interesting to me because when I hear, I do think David Johnston has a sterling reputation, but at some point you need to read the room. At some point, optics might outshine your sterling. And for him to say, I deeply respect the right of the House of Commons to express its opinion about my work going forward, but I got a mandate from this government and I have a duty to pursue that work until my mandate is complete. I just think that I get it. You're a great guy. You've done something similar for Harper in the past. You were a conservative-appointed governor general, but I just think you have to figure out which way the wind is blowing, and I think the guy should step aside. Let's start off with you, Carl.
Yeah, I mean, I hate that we're talking about David Johnston and the politics of like who is or isn't looking at what could be happening, and we're not having actual conversations about the data and the information that we need to be discussing. There are all kinds of problems between CSIS workers talking to reporters anonymously, news agencies moving forward mm-hmm. with those anonymous reports, substantiated or not substantiated, reputations being destroyed on very shaky grounds of information. But then also, frankly, the Liberals have handled this poorly. But then the opposition parties are so quick to pick up the ball. And I think people are just seeing partisan bickering are going to be turned off to what are some pretty important issues. Not the partisan bickering, not David Johnston, but what the heck actually happened with the elections.
Yep. What about you, Ken?
Yeah, 100% agree with Carl. And you know what? I would agree with you too, Jim, that I think David Johnston did have a sterling reputation. I don't know. I think some of the sheen certainly has been taken from it. I think he was, and I still think he is, the right guy for this job. If not David Johnston, then who would be the right person in his stead for this job? But yes, at some point, even if he is the right guy, even if it is the right thing to do, like you said, Jim, at some point you have to recognize that, is this serving the process? Mm. Is this getting us to a point where we're going to get to the place where we need to be? I think right now, like it or not, David Johnston is standing in the way of getting all that stuff Carl was talking about, you know, moving the process forward to talking about the things that matter David's a barrier to that, I think.
I just wonder, like, the summertime, it's usually barbecue circuit, but who knows how this festers through the summer. And there's still three more weeks of them sitting in Ottawa, and those 3 weeks are supposed to be working to midnight in order to get everything that the NDP and the Liberals want to get done before a summer break. And on the other hand, I think people would go nuts if Trudeau prorogued again. So I just wonder. I think that's why I say that this might be a very interesting day, because you don't know what moves Jagmeet Singh might make over the next couple of weeks before a break, Carl.
Yeah, but that's the problem, is I think Jagmeet Singh is playing into Pierre Poilievre's hands right now. If Justin Trudeau ends up coming out looking bad out of this, it's not going to be Jagmeet Singh who benefits from this. It's going to be Pierre Poilievre. Jagmeet Singh has a deal, and people are losing faith in the deal when it comes to pharmacare and dental care and everything else that the NDP is trying to push the Liberals to do. And so he's buying into the big distraction machine. I think this is a big strategic flop on Jagmeet Singh's part.
Interesting. What about you, Ken?
Yeah, I disagree. I think, at least in Jagmeet Singh's mind, I feel like he sees himself as the linchpin. And we've talked about this before, how, you know, Jagmeet Singh, because he has this confidence and supply agreement, feels like, you know, he has control of the government. He's you know, the puppet master behind the scenes pulling the strings, and he's just kind of waiting for his prime opportunity to pull that last string that will topple this government, lead it into an election. And I don't know that this is that string that he's ready to pull, but I think we're getting very, very close.
We're seeing some sources, the Toronto Star, suggesting that the Liberal government and the provincial government in Ontario have reached a tentative deal worth billions of dollars to save the Stellantis plant, the battery plant in Windsor. I think it's a huge thing. I think it's a good thing. A lot of people are concerned that you might be throwing good money after bad, but if we can get a footprint here in the early going of still building electric cars, I think that's probably a good move for Canada. What about you, Carl?
Yeah, I stand where I've stood on this for a while, that when we talk about a high-speed corridor connecting the already built-up areas in our territories from Quebec City and or Montreal down to the Windsor area, which I think would very much benefit Windsor, one of the reasons it hasn't moved forward is because we're looking at tens of billions of dollars that it would cost. Now we're over $10 billion in subsidies. If we're going to be spending this kind of public money, it's time to be responsible and intentional about how it gets spent. Listen, I'm all for electric cars. We can't just replace petroleum cars with electric cars. We need public transit. We need alternatives.
Okay. What about you, Ken?
Yeah, you know what? I agree. There's dozens and dozens, hundreds of, in fact, of places where we could spend $13 billion. At least that's the reported number.
Mm-hmm.
Is it good overall for our economy? Probably. Is it great for the city of Windsor, for the people who are working in the on the construction of that complex? Absolutely, 100%. My question is, how many companies are scrambling to put together a similar bid at this point, now that they've seen that the vault is open and that the Canadian government is writing these kinds of checks? I'd love to know just what else is being worked
Who's
on
coming
right now.
Cap in hand, and how often can you afford to do this, right? If they do come cap in hand with more. Listen, I love your idea, Carl, of a rapid train line on connecting Ontario and Quebec, but I don't know, does that have the long-term jobs of putting the foundation of an electric vehicle legacy in Canada?
Well, I just divided $13 billion by $75,000, which I think is a pretty fantastic wage, and I'm not sure that the workers will get that. It is a significant amount of employment that could be generated directly. So, like, we could just divert these funds in another way. I'm just saying that it's a huge, huge number, and man, did this happen quick. Like, this happened so quick, and I've been hearing about fiscal conservative policies for my whole life, and now there's a provincial government and a federal government that are falling all over themselves to spend this money.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with a number of different stories, including a federal court of appeals saying Canada is not constitutionally obliged to bring home suspected ISIS fighters to this country. That and the excitement of Ken and Carl talking and their final takes, then our deep dive with Rachel Aiello in Ottawa about the day in Ottawa and what it could mean for this Liberal-supported NDP government. I am Jim Richards, and this is News Talk Tonight.
The Stay in Your Car, In the Driveway radio show. Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Rachel Aiello, who is in Ottawa with CTV, she's a parliamentary reporter, will break down what happened and what could happen next over the course of the next 3 weeks as Parliament sits, and then maybe we move into the summer, and that's all about, if you're just joining us, the story of how the Liberals the NDP and the Conservatives voted 174 to 150 to encourage David Johnston as the rapporteur to step aside and for the government to move to an inquiry. But Justin Trudeau is not moved by any of that, and either is the rapporteur. That in 15 minutes' time. This is The Rundown. I'm Jim Richards. Ken Eastwood is with us. He does the morning show in London on News Talk 1290. And Carl Dockstader is co-host of One Dish, One Mic on The Rundown tonight. They'll have their final takes in a couple of minutes' time. The federal Court of Appeal has said that Canada constitutionally is not obliged to bring home suspected ISIS fighters. I was shocked by this. The government could appeal it. The government is fighting this, by the way, because I'm guessing they know how that plays in the media after they decided to give Omar Khadr $10 million. And listen, I believe that Omar Khadr was a child soldier, and I believe that I've always been told that the government is supposed to advocate for its citizens when they're abroad. So I think this is interesting and probably will be appealed, guys. But Carl, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that this sets a dangerous precedent. I totally understand the optics of what it's going to look like bringing suspected terrorists or people that are suspected of leaving for the purpose of joining an ISIS fighter cell. But I do think that the law is supposed to protect Canadians pretty unconditionally. I'm shocked. I'm honestly shocked. And it concerns me that those rights can come and go.
Yeah, what you're saying is a Canadian is a Canadian is a Canadian. And that does not mean that when they come home, that they wouldn't face the music. They wouldn't maybe go to jail for 5-10 years for treason or something like that. And I'm guessing that's the side that you would be on, Carl.
Yeah, just to clarify, that's right. Like, there should still be consequences, and if they made those decisions, and I don't think it's easy, but yeah, they should be protected, and every effort should be made to bring them back, even if we don't like them, especially if we don't like them.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what circumstance might change where the circumstance could be flipped, and you find yourself abroad in a similar situation, and then your government is not advocating for you. It's basically, hey, yeah, that's our garbage. You know what they were doing, I think, was garbage. So yeah, those people are our problem. Bring them back here, and they'll face the music here. Ken?
Yeah, and you and Carl both hit on a key part of this, which is they're alleged to have done some things. They are suspected. They're not charged with anything. So if I leave the country for whatever reason, and I am detained without charges of a crime, am I not still a Canadian? And, you know, there's a reason that this ended up in federal appellate court, because it is a very, very complicated legal issue. So anything we say here is going to absolutely simplify it. But at the risk of speaking simply, I think this comes down to what it means to be Canadian and when you cease being Canadian. At what point do you absolve your citizenship simply by leaving the country? Because it appears that that's what the appellate court has decided here.
You're right about having a day in court and having been found guilty. That has not happened. But I'll be interesting to see, because, listen, this is the last thing this government needed right now. If they on their own had the idea of bringing these people back, I think it would be all hell. It would be just a fire that I'm not sure that this government could put out, although I'm pretty sure that Justin Trudeau would try to, because he believes that he still has this unprecedented public capital that he can spend left and right. But I think he's broke. Let's move along. I did not know that this was a sport of cruelty. There's a couple of ex-conservation officers who think that Ontario expanding hunting dogs is a bad idea. And from what I'm reading, and I did not know that for sport that they would release foxes or coyotes that you would be able to hunt down. Now, if it was something that was done in the wild because they're, you know, taking down sheep or something like that, I think that would be a little bit different. But this sport of cruelty seems to, I agree with the ex-conservation officers, seems to be excessively cruel, Ken.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm like you, I did not know that this was, well, I knew that there was a version. Didn't we have fox hunting? And wasn't that, you know, a popular thing in like the 17th century? But this is not the 17th century. I feel like this kind of activity, I mean, maybe there's a purpose that this sport serves that I'm not seeing.
Hmm.
Aside from hunting captive animals, and to be clear, they don't. The point of this sport, as far as I can gather, is not to kill the animal that is being tracked. It's to simply do that, just track and teach the dog how to do that. But clearly, this is. I mean, it's sometimes going to end not well for the captive animal.
Carl.
Yeah, I wonder who talked to someone else to have this rule change. Like seriously, I would love to know what conversation happened in what process that someone was like, oh, I think that this is a good idea. And someone else said, yeah, okay, let's make that change happen for you. Like, of all the problems to solve in the world, how did this make its way to the top of the queue?
Yeah. Do not know, especially this day and age. Listen, it's about time for the final takes. I'm looking for something to, is anybody interested before we do the final takes in Facebook, known as Meta now, testing paid verification for Canadian Facebook and Instagram creators? Now, I guess that falls out of the normal purview of most people who use Facebook, who are just, you know, yelling at each other, but this would be for somebody who wants to be taken seriously that might loop in their YouTube channel. Carl?
I love our Facebook followers for One Dish, One Mic, but I think about getting off the platform every single day as it gets weirder and they do stranger things to monetize it. And yeah, this makes me wonder if I should find another way to connect with our listeners. I mean, radio has been working out pretty good.
All right, yeah. Carl.
Ken?
Sorry, Ken.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah, I 100% agree with Carl. I mean, I could care less if I have a blue check mark on Twitter or on Facebook. So nope, I'm cool with the way things are now. And if they change, and if I'm going to have to pay for it, I certainly would not be doing that.
Well, I still remember the day that I lost my, I think the whole nation remembers the day that I lost my blue check mark. And it's something that I don't like to necessarily dwell on, but it certainly does hurt, ladies and gentlemen, very much so. Let's move along to the final takes. What's yours tonight, Carl?
I just want to give a shout out to Bonnie Crombie and the city of Mississauga for asking Canada to change the lyrics to "Our Home on Native Land." I think it's cool. I think it's a little bit symbolic. I'd rather have substantive systemic change. But while we're waiting for that, we could change the national anthem to make it cooler.
I just don't know how when you think about what people, I don't understand why somebody needs to get angry about that one. It seems to be a simple, easy, switch of the lyric that is, you know, not a hard lyric. It's like it's not like a total remake that everybody's going to forget. What about you, Ken?
So my final take would be just to make sure everybody's keeping an eye on London, because I really do think that we here in London are shaping up to be the battleground when it comes to so-called rent evictions. This is when a landlord says they've got to do renovations to a building and they need to evict you, and then they do not give you that same unit back at the same price. We've got one building here in London that is certainly going to be a focus. In fact, Jugmeet Singh was just in town this past weekend to talk about it. So keep your eyes on London for rent evictions.
All right. That's sad. Thank you very much, guys. Enjoy your weekend, if I can say that, on a Wednesday. That is Ken Eastwood, who does the morning show tomorrow morning in London on News Talk 1290. And also Carl Dockstader, who's the co-host of One Dish, One Mic on the iHeart Talk Radio Network. We'll dig deep on what happened in Ottawa today. That's next.
This is the iHeartRadio Talk Network, and News Talk Tonight continues with Jim Richards.
A guy who was on an Amazing Race back in 2014 has a different race and challenge on his hands. He is trying to escape the flames that are in and around Halifax. We'll talk to him coming up after the news at the top of the hour. As we heard earlier today on the iHeartTalk Radio Network, Vashi Kapelos talked to some people who have lost their homes. And we also heard from politicians in and around the Halifax area earlier today. We'll play some of that for you here on the iHeartTalk Radio Network. But first, here's a clip of Jugmeet Singh and why he wanted David Johnston to step aside. This is from yesterday, but it still applies today.
Exactly. And I said that from the beginning. I have not attacked Mr. Johnston personally. I think he's someone who's clearly served his country, clearly put the needs of his country first. But again, I've said from the beginning, it wasn't the right choice, because we shouldn't have gone down the path of a special rapporteur. We should have gone down the path of a public inquiry. It was not going to satisfy the concerns that have been raised, and it hasn't.
But okay, so that's where we pick up today, because he had proposed something and all of the opposition parties voted on it. It passed 174 to 150. What were they voting on? They were voting on essentially asking David Johnston to step aside and then for the government to call an inquiry. The Prime Minister basically says he is assuring Canadians that they are adequately addressing foreign interference. And David Johnston says, listen, I got a job to do and I'm going to do it. Neither of these guys can read the room and find out that the optics are bad, and we need an inquiry. I talked to Rachel Aiello a little earlier today. She is a parliamentary reporter for CTV, and I asked her to basically take us through what happened yesterday and today.
Essentially, Jugmeet Singh has brought forward this motion saying that because of questions about Johnston's credibility, about some of the team he had around him in doing this work as special rapporteur, and because he recommended against a public inquiry, it is time for him to step down. So they put forward what is called an opposition day motion, a chance that the opposition parties get from time to time to kind of set the agenda in the House of Commons. So that was their focus in their debate yesterday, this idea that it's time for Johnston to step aside and someone else be chosen and that a public inquiry be called.
And how did things go today on that note?
So that motion passed. So it had the backing of the Conservatives, the Bloc, the NDP, the Greens, and a couple of independent MPs. Numbers-wise, that gave them the majority, and they were able to pass this vote, even though the Liberals and one of the independent MPs voted against it. Now, the caveat here, this doesn't mean that David Johnston is off the job. It's a non-binding motion, but essentially it is sending that signal to the federal government that the majority of MPs in the House of Commons no longer have confidence in Johnston being able to do this work. And I do think it is going to kind of pile on that pressure on the Prime Minister and on Johnston himself to reconsider whether he is the best person to continue this work.
So this is essentially just happening today, and we don't know how and when dominoes will fall. What are you suspecting will play out over the next, whether it's tonight or next couple of days?
Well, so far, the Prime Minister continues to defend Johnston, and even in presenting his report last week, he did a pretty full-throated attempt himself as the special rapporteur to say, you know, over my many years, I was governor general, I was appointed to this, that, and the other, and I've never had my credibility questioned in this way, really seeming to kind of dig in. So we don't have any indications yet whether Johnson will take a look at what happened in the House today and make the call to step aside, or if they're going to put their head down, say, I've got the support and the confidence of the Prime Minister, and I'm going to continue this plan of embarking on public hearings this summer. But we'll be asking and we'll be waiting to see what shakes out, because certainly this whole thing is not going away.
Have you heard from the opposition yet today on this after the vote?
So just before the vote, NDP leader Jagmeet Singh came out and said he hoped that he was anticipating then that this would get majority support, as it did. He said that he hoped that that would send the message that Prime Minister and Johnson needed to hear, that something has to change. They're really seeing this as a united call from opposition parties to have a different approach. The Conservatives continue to say, as they have been saying essentially since Johnson was appointed, that because of his ties to the Prime Minister's family and his past affiliation with the Trudeau Foundation, that he is not a credible actor in this position, despite the fact that he was appointed to Governor General by former Conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper and took on a similar rapporteur-esque role under a previous Conservative government looking at other matters. And in those cases, the Conservatives had no issues with his credibility or his objectivity. So it's been a bit of a hot political potato here on the Hill, for sure.
Well, how long do they sit till the summer break?
We have three more weeks ahead of us, and we just found out today, actually, that the government is going to be moving to have them sit until midnight every night between now and the end of June to essentially move through the key bills that they need to get passed and work on their legislation. They're saying this is because of Conservative obstruction, but certainly kind of as those late nights go on and as the government tries to move its bills through, it's going to be continuing to face questions in the House of Commons and at committee from opposition MPs about this hot foreign interference file.
Yeah, it's not like it's going to disappear anytime soon, I'm guessing, especially if they don't budge on it. And then I guess they hope, if they can make it to 3 weeks, Rachel, they hope that it can disappear over the summer barbecue circuit. But I'm not sure that that is going to happen.
Yeah, I think the interesting question there is going to be whether the committee that's been studying this decides to keep up hearings over the summer. So while the House of Commons will go on a break for July and August, allowing MPs to head out into their ridings, there is the ability for committees to continue their work. But there is this very much a rumor and lots of speculation, the thought that perhaps the government would want to try to prorogue Parliament, essentially shut it down completely for the summer, to prohibit the committee from continuing its work and trying to come back with a fresh slate in the fall. That comes with a bunch of other complications, though, with other key bills. So right now, I would say I would proceed with caution and thinking that's the plan. But certainly one that's getting thrown about, mostly from the opposition parties, thinking that the government is trying every way they can to try to divert attention and heat off of this issue.
Sure. I mean, Harper's done that before. Trudeau's done that before. But, I mean, the juxtaposition about a government that is planning to sit until midnight to get all of their legislation through and then just pulling the cord, I think is a hard thing to sell to the Canadian public, especially when perhaps people are thinking about an election.
I think that is a fantastic point to make, and certainly something to be keeping in mind as these weeks go on and the push gets stronger. Clearly, the government is saying that they want to focus on other issues like the economy, climate change, affordability, and they want to be able to put forward debates on those issues in the House and move through bills that they say will help Canadians with those issues. So it's kind of a twofold thing that we're watching here. It's once the House rises, the Senate still has some time to sit, and really bills don't pass until they're done either. So it's not entirely in the government's hands, which makes these last couple weeks of the House sitting always a dynamic and a bit chaotic of a time.
That is Rachel Aiello. She is a CTV parliamentary reporter, and we appreciate her time for setting the course of what could be three interesting weeks in Ottawa as the House continues to sit. And my mind would be blown if Trudeau decided to prorogue. I guess we've been shocked by the guy before, but I find that mind-boggling. I think it'll be really interesting on how that plays out. What is happening to our friends in Nova Scotia? We'll tell the story of one man who had to get everything together on the weekend and get out of his home. He'll join us in a bit. That is next on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.